Welcome back to another episode of A Simple Life with Michael Jeffries. On this podcast, we attempt to let go of all the subtext and social barriers that hold us back. It isn't about being right or wrong. We're just trying to keep it real. This interview with Hope was recorded less than a week from the anniversary of her son Justin's death on November 16th, 2016. This is a raw story of emotions, including hatred, anger, and revenge, all swirling with grief and guilt. Hope's story brought me to tears more than once. But Hope was able to laugh at memories of her son during the interview as well, and I laughed with her. Hope came to a turning point in her grief after Justin's killer was freed from all charges. Her healing led her to create Grief to Hope, a free 7-week virtual course that anyone is welcome to join. This episode is dedicated to the memory of Justin, Hope's son. Now let's get into it. Welcome back to A Simple Life with Michael Jeffries. Today, I'm really excited to have Hope Rieger on the podcast from Grief to Hope, the author of Grief to Hope. Thanks for coming on the show, Hope.
My pleasure. It's great to be here.
So let's just start with kind of a little bit about you. Where do you live? Who are you? All of that kind of stuff.
Sure, absolutely. I live in Ohio, where it's like every season within a week sometimes. I think today was 70, tomorrow is 39, so it'll be a little range of both. But I love it here. I live with my husband, Mike. I have two children. Brian's will be 33 coming soon. And then Justin, which we'll talk about, is forever 19. And then I have three beautiful granddaughters that are like the love of my life. And they're 10, 7, and just barely almost 9 months old. And she's sick right now with this little cold flu thing, and it breaks my heart. I have been working for a major financial institution for about a little over 26 years. Oh, wow. I get to work from home. So I have a day job on top of my Grief to Hope work. And so that's pretty much me in a nutshell.
Awesome. So we met on a Facebook group where podcast hosts and podcast interviewees or guests kind of connect. I asked for people who would be willing to share authentic and intimate stories about their lives. And you raised your hand and said, I've got a story about grief, about my son who was murdered. So I guess where would be a good place to start in that story? I'd love to hear. I don't have any time limits. I don't know if you do, but I'd love to hear the whole story.
No, absolutely. That's amazing. I love to share my story because I think sharing my story, somebody out there will resonate with it and go, okay, she made it. She's doing it. And so, I'll go as deep as you want, but it started simply in 2015. I went through, or 2014, husband and I at the time, my husband, he's my ex-husband, and I separated. And so in 2000, I left the home, and then with my son, Justin, my oldest son had already started his family, bought a home and that kind of thing. So my son and I moved out, and in doing so, I thought this is a good time for me to sort of shift gears in my life. And so I had an opportunity to get a promotion in a job that was 2 hours away from my hometown, which is a little bit outside of Dayton. And it was the opportunity to move to Columbus. And I thought, what a fresh start, right? And in doing so, my son, who was 18 at the time, getting ready to turn 18 at the time, I was like, no way, Mom, I'm not moving away from my family, my friends, everybody. Right. And he's 18 and he was like, I don't want to leave, blah, blah, blah. So once he turned 18, of course, I couldn't force him to move with Mom. So I moved to Columbus for my job. And so he sort of played the stay with the friends, stay with mom when I don't have anything better to do, stay with my friends, stay with mom, and kind of thing. So it was off and on.
So he didn't want to stay with his dad?
He did for a very short time. Okay. But being an 18-year-old man living with your dad, that just wasn't fun. not that living with your mom was any better, right? But
yeah, Columbus is a college town. There's cool things happening. You know what I mean?
Not where I was living. Not where I was. I wasn't in the. It wasn't the cool part of town. Let's just say I lived north of Columbus, so it was very. It was shopping, and so if you love shopping, it was perfect. And so he, but also if he comes to stay with mom, that meant, all right, you got to get a job, you got to do chores, you got to do the normal kind of things. And so that lasted about a month or so. They'd be like, you know, I'm going to go hang with my friends for a while, then I'll come back. And this went on from 2015 to 2016. And then in 2016, he was 19 at that time. He finally decided he found a roommate in our hometown that he wanted to stay with. And he was like, Mom,
is this a friend that he knew and they were going to be roommates now? Or did he just meet this person? How did that happen?
I think it happened within a friend zone. So I did not know this person. And okay. So he said, Mom, he had rented a home from his mother. So the friend did. And so I was like, okay, you know, and he's like, I'm going to get a great job. I'm going to, you know, be independent. I'm going to make this work. And, you know, and I think he was ready to move on to his new phase. Right. Yeah. Being an adult. And so
and this
I was
back in Dayton.
Yes. And okay. Yeah, outside of Dayton. Yeah. It was outside of Dayton. And so I was like, okay, great. And Justin and I talked every single day. No matter what was going on in our lives, we talked every single day. And if we missed a day, we made up for it the following day. So we were really close. And so in September of 2016, he moves in with this person. I'm very, you know, I'm like, are you sure? It was just, and it wasn't that I didn't think he could handle it. It was more or less, you know, worried about this, you know, how long is this going to last kind of thing. Okay. And so we talked and of course, when he needed money, he called, you know, and called and called and called and called until I answered because I was the mom that never answered her cell phone. Like, you know, Mom, why do you have this thing? And so for the first couple months, things were going good. He was working off and on. He would get a job, love it for a week and a half, and then quit or whatever. So it was that normal teenage behavior. And so I had never been to the home. So in, I think it was late September, early October, I had said, Justin, we need to meet for lunch. I miss you. I want to see you. And he was like, yeah, let's meet for lunch. And so the next day I drove in from where I lived and we ended up, I called and called and called and called, never picked up. And so he was a teenager. And at the time, you know, 11 o'clock in the morning is early, I guess. So for some of us. And so I had a soccer game to attend for my granddaughter. And so I finally got a hold of him after and he was like, you know, I really don't feel like going out to lunch. Can you just bring me something, Mom? And while you're at it, can you bring me some food, you know, like groceries? And I'm like, yeah, sure. So I ended up, I went to fast food and then I went to Kroger's and got the pizza rolls, the pretzels, the, you know, the junk food.
The 19-year-old frozen food that he's
right.
That he wants.
Right.
Wow,
that
what
he
a
can.
Mom.
I know.
Lettuce and tomatoes.
You know,
if he likes.
If I knew he wouldn't eat it, I would eat it. I would have bought it, but he would never have made it. So Reese cups and Doritos it is. So we ended up and I pulled up in front of the home. And he jumps out of the door and hops over the railing. There's like this metal railing, like his normal self, goofy self, comes to the back of the SUV, grabs all the groceries. Thanks, Mom. You're the best, kind of, you know, I love you. And I said, love you. And that was it. He went back in, and he of course had other things to do apparently, and I remember looking in the rearview mirror and saying, "I love you," and he's like, "I love you too, Mom. Thanks. You know you're the best, of course." And he hops back over the railing, and that was the last time I saw my son. And so, and at that time, I didn't know that. And so in November the 16th, coming up very soon, November 17th, 2016, I get a knock at the door in my Columbus home. And I live in a condo and I look out the window and I see two police officers standing there. Me being the mom of my son, who's a little bit of a dangerous kind of kid, thinking, oh my gosh, what has that kid done, right? And nothing in the world came to me about being, you know, something horrible or horrific.
Okay.
My first instinct is, he's in jail,
Right.
doesn't have my cell phone number, needs to get a hold of mama, right?
Right.
And so when I answered the door, they asked me who I was and if I was Justin's mom. So then, of course, I'm like, yep, it would be that one, right? You know, just thinking that it was my youngest one. And they hand me a piece of paper and they with a number and a name on it. And they said, yes, this person's been trying to get a hold of you and you need to call them as soon as possible. So, okay. And so I said, do you know what it's about? And they're like, no, we don't know what it's about. And this is 6:30 in the morning.
Oh, wow.
So I'm like, okay. So then again, I'm thinking, what has this child done, right? If it was serious, they would have told me. If it was something that's going through my mind, if this was horrible or, you know, something had happened, they would have told me, like in the movies and TV. And so I thanked him. I shut the door. I went upstairs and at the time, I was living with my boyfriend, who I had I'm married to now, and he's like, "What was that about?" And I said, "I don't know." They asked me if I was Justin's mom. They handed me this piece of paper and told me to call. He's like, "Okay." So he goes ahead and gets in the shower, gets ready for work, and I sit down on the bed and I dial the number. And I'm thinking nobody's going to answer at 6:30 in the morning, right? And the person on the other line answers and says, Greene County Coroner. And I said, I think I have the wrong number. And he says, is this Hope? And I said, yes. And he says, I am so sorry to do this over the phone. And I don't think I was prepared for what he says. And I don't know if it registered as much as it probably would have normally if I was somewhat prepared. But he says, I am so sorry to tell you this over the phone, but Justin passed away. And I said, you must have the wrong Justin. I don't know what you're talking about. And he says, again, I'm so sorry to do this on the phone. And he said, Justin and a friend of him, friend of his, another roommate apparently was staying in the home. So there was three men in this home. And he says, they got into an altercation, a verbal altercation, you know, yelling back and forth, arguing about something. It turned physical and they started throwing punches. And he put a gun to Justin's chest, shot, killed him. And I'm sitting there going, I don't think you're talking to the right person. I am in complete denial. And he says, you know, I'm so sorry. And I kept asking him, like, where is he? Where's Justin? And he's like, ma'am, he's at the morgue. It's an investigation. You're not going to be able to see him. And I'm like, no. In the back of my mind, I'm thinking, where's he at? I just need to fix this as a mom, right?
Right,
As a
right.
mom, you're like, I just need to fix this. I just need to get there and fix it. And I don't know what you're telling me, but, and he says, you know, I'll meet you because he was asking me where I'm at. I'm like, I'm in Columbus. I work in Columbus. And he said, yeah, he said, we couldn't find you because we had went to an address that was listed in Xenia, was your last previous address. And then because I hadn't changed my driver's license, it took them a while to find me in Columbus. Okay. So this had happened at 1:30 in the morning, and this is 6:30. So 5 hours after my son passed, I'm finally hearing about it. And ironically, it was all over the news. But of course, his name wasn't, you know, was not, because they didn't have, you know, the authority to do so till they notified me. And so all I kept on saying was, let me, you know, I just got to fix this. Where is he at? And so finally he said, I'll meet you at your son's house. My oldest son lived at our hometown later on today, and we'll talk. And I hung up the phone, and my husband comes back out, and he's like, what was that about? You know, sort of nonchalant. And I just said, he said, Justin's gone. And that 5, 10, 15 seconds changed who I was forever. And within that time period, I had to call parents, grandparents, his father. And the worst call, of course, was to his brother. And then I sort of, the rest of the few days after that was sort of like this big, I compare it to a fog or a candle waxing. Like, you know how candle wax, just like a big blur, kind of like melting. And that's how I felt, like everything in my life had sort of just stopped, and that glob of wax just sort of sat there. And of course, you go through all the horrific things that you are never prepared for, which is one of the things that I talk about in my program, and we'll talk about that in my book, but is that the worst time to be surprised about not knowing what the heck to do is when you're in the midst of grief and you don't know what to do, right? Because nobody talks about grief. Nobody talks about that you'll get that call from the organ donor and you got to answer all these questions. And nobody talks about having, you know, finding clothes for your, you know, and music for the funeral and pictures and things like that. You have no idea. But the worst thing was, when I got back into the hometown, I remember the coroner telling me I need to find a funeral home to get Justin from the morgue before I could see him. And all I kept on thinking was, as you can imagine as a mother, was he's cold and alone. And that's what kept going through my mind. I have to go and get him. He's so cold and he's so alone in this place, in this dark place. And so my mission was to get him to where I could at least see him and, you know, try to wrap my head around this. So in doing so, calling several funeral homes, they're like, yeah, we have to have $10,000 to go pick him up and blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking, okay, I have savings. I have 401k. I have retirement. I have insurance. But where am I going to get $10,000 today to go get my son, right? That's my thought process. Right. And so I was angry as hell to think, you know, I gotta come up with all this money, like I'm purchasing a car to go pick up my son. I was so mad that this is what I have to deal with, you know, in the midst of my grieving, is trying to come up with, you know, $10,000. And it wasn't until I called a third funeral home and I said, listen, I don't know how fast I can get this money, but I have it, but I need to get my son. And I don't want him to be alone. I don't want him to be in this dark place. And that funeral home said to me simply, we will take care of this and we will worry about the money later. And to this day, I'm so grateful to that, because I felt like for the first time that someone actually cared enough about me as a person versus the profits. And I get it. They're a business. They're running a business. But you are dealing with the depths of hell. hell that they're going through. And I felt like it was so impersonal that when I found somebody that really cared about how I was feeling, I was so grateful. So grateful. And so, yeah. And I kept thinking, you know, as a mother, to know that he's this alone, cold, and I kept picturing, I had this horrible picture in my mind of him being in this, you know, very scary, dark place, and I couldn't protect him and I couldn't take care of him. And that was probably the worst of everything that those few days happened. And that's where my story began.
Wow. Wow. So let's break that down a little bit. So you get this, you see your son, you give him some groceries. He's busy. So he's like, see you, Mom. Thanks so much.
I'm out. Right. Right. Exactly.
You can leave now.
You know him way better than I thought. Yes, absolutely. That was him. See ya.
And he does kind of adventurous, wild things. So
yes.
It wouldn't be, was he ever in trouble with police before this?
Oh, you know, he was actually, he got in trouble with some friends. He had been arrested before. It was like some, you know, something stupid kids do.
Right.
But it was never like, like he's arrested for, you know, something horrific.
Right. He had been a kid. He'd done
right
kid things. He'd gotten in trouble. He'd gotten scared. And now he knew never to do that stuff again.
I don't know if Justin ever learned that, little did he. I don't know. The kid was fearless. And he literally would have tried probably anything once. So I don't know if he ever learned from that experience, but yeah, he was the kind of child that just, you know, he was free. He was a leader. He was never a follower. He was, you know, he did his own thing. He was very much into, being independent, but then, you know, of course he needed Mom right there. And we were very, very close, very, very close. And ironically, the night before this happened, I was going to the movies with a friend of mine and Justin called. And I said, oh, and I even said to the friend, oh, there's Justin. He must need money. That's exactly my words. And I said, I'll call him back after the movies because we were going into the movies. And I said, if it's urgent, he'll keep calling. Like if he's at McDonald's and in line and he needs me to sell him money, he'll keep calling, right? And he never called me back that night. And so that was one of the things I struggled with, was like, what if I would have answered? What if I would have, if he would have said, Mom, you know, something's going down, you know, and this was earlier in the evening than when this happened, but I kept going over in my head, what if, what if, what if, what if. And one of the things that I've learned is that everybody has free will. And that if I would have answered the phone and he would have said something crazy, or we would have argued or would have hung up on bad terms, not that we usually did, but it was a possibility, mm-hmm. that would have probably haunted me worse than if I didn't answer the phone. So I try to put it in that perspective that free will is, you know, I have free will, he has free will, everyone has free will. And so those play a factor as we move through our lives, and that things happen the way that they happen because of it.
Was he close with his dad?
No.
He was close with you?
No. His dad and him had a very... they had an awkward relationship, I would say. They weren't very close. Him and his dad were not, they were just two opposites of every single way. And so they struggled in their relationship.
Okay. How about his brother? Were they, I mean, it sounds like there was some age difference. and yes. kind of like life stage difference. What was your relationship like?
So my oldest son, there's 7 years difference. So there was very much an age difference. So when he was, you know, 18, Brian was 25. He had his daughter, his home, and so they always he had was adulting. That. He was already adulting, and so him and in this stage, they were sort of distant because they were at two different points in their life. And a lot of times, because my oldest son was in the same town as the hometown, my oldest son got to hear from him a lot more. Like, I need, can you give me this? Can I borrow this? Can you kind of thing. And so he was sort of almost the father figure to Justin in that sort of light. So him and Justin you talk about complete opposites. My oldest son never got in trouble, never even had like recess detention. And and he was always like the straight and narrow. And then Justin was always like, my son was a straight and narrow. And then Justin was sort of the squiggly line that goes, you know, he was very much, I'm going to do my own thing. I'm going to be my own person, my own thing. And sometimes, I've been to many principal offices for Justin. So, he did his own thing in his own way. And sometimes it wasn't the right way. So
let's go back to that timeline. So you get a call from Justin, but you're in the movies. Mm-hmm. Then later that night, this situation with the three roommates happens.
Yes.
Justin shot. Mm-hmm. The coroner in the county is trying to track you down and get some mm-hmm. help from the Columbus Police Department.
Yes.
You're notified in the early morning hours.
Yes.
And then right after you're notified is when you start making those phone calls to family and friends to let them know. Oh my
God. Yeah. It was right. So it was on the news. I had
like
found
some
out
young Dayton area man shot in altercation kind of thing.
Right. So the crazy thing was where we're from in this hometown where we're from, this was like the first murder in years. Right. So it was pretty big news on the local news channel. And so what was being stated was exactly where it happened. The road, they had the house, and they said 19-year-old male. And so nobody knew who it was, of course, but everybody in my family knew that's where Justin was staying. And so that's where, and of course it's 6:30 in the morning. So as the news is going on, probably not a lot of people are putting two and two together, but I knew that I had to call and let people know. And also I had to get from Columbus to Dayton, to my son's house, my oldest son's house, to start, figuring out what to do.
To meet the coroner.
The coroner and arrange the funeral thing. That's when I started. So, thankfully,
when the car ride from Columbus to Dayton is when you're making all these phone calls.
No. I decided that what I wanted to do was right after I hung up the phone, I talked to my husband and it was like, you got a call. And so my first call was to his brother. There were so many. Why, Mom? And what? Are you sure? How did this happen? And if a lot of people go through their whole life without any kind of tragedies. Right. And what I mean by that is, death happens, but it's not traumatic. It's not, and unfortunately there's health. There's things that prepare you in a little bit when you have these tragic events, if you never, it's overwhelmingly emotional and your body starts semi, like autopiloting your responses is the way that I feel. Like I was constantly on autopilot for like the first, I would say, month. And so I'm telling this story and without complete emotion, because I'm thinking in my mind, I'm just like, I just got to get this out, get this right, over with, right. And get
home. You're in business mode.
Right. And my mode, exactly. That's exactly it. Like, I'm like, I got to get this done, get in the shower, get dressed, get home. And if you know me personally, you know that I'm a planner. And I'm like, okay, I got to get A, B, C, D, N so I can get to, E or whatever. And so I was like, okay, I got to call this person. It was like a business transaction. It literally, that was the perfect way to explain it. It was business. It was like, let's get this done. And it was horrific and screams and crying and sometimes silence and the questions. And they wanted all the answers. And I didn't have any of the answers. I had to retell that corner story 7-8 times, just over and over to my parents, my dad, my mom, his mom, his dad's mother, and to his brother. I felt like I was telling this story over and over again, but I didn't believe it. I didn't think it was real. And so I get in the shower and I drive home. It's a 2-hour drive, about an hour and a half, 2-hour drive.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
I did not drive.
Hold on. So you go to Dayton or to the hometown. You meet the coroner at your son's house. You call funeral homes, find a funeral home that will pick up Justin.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you head home back to Columbus?
No. Okay. Right after I took a shower from Columbus, that's when, after I called everybody, took a shower, got dressed,
okay.
Went home.
Okay.
That was an hour and a half. Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And I stayed at my son's house for days, like until, cause that's where everything was. That was where all my family was. That's where the funeral was going to be. That's where the burial was going to be. That's where everything was taking place. And so my husband, bless his heart, drove back and forth, like for clothes. I had some pictures, all of my kids' pictures and things. I had some of Justin's things. Those were at my house. So he was driving back and forth and doing that for me. But for the first few days, it's just, I got, finally the funeral home said, okay, let's, we're going to go pick him up. They called me. They said that they were going to release him the day after and that I could go into the funeral home, make the arrangements and see Justin. So, I was grateful for that. The coroner came. He basically explained the story just as I did. And the gentleman, and when I say gentleman, people are like, you call him a gentleman? And I'm like, I don't know what else to call him. But the person that took Justin's life was arrested that night for murder. He bonded out through his family a day or so later. I'm not exactly sure of the timeline. And so stories across this small town were going wild of what really happened and what didn't happen. And, things were said that there was a struggle for the gun. That was never told to me.
So like this guy, like this is self-defense.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. And when Justin never had a weapon on him, he didn't have a knife, a gun, a bat, nothing. It was fist fighting. And, so later on, months after the funeral went on, he was, arrested and bonded out. Stories were circling. I don't know the truth. I don't even know what they were fighting about, to be honest with you. And I don't know if I'll ever know the truth or if I ever want to know the truth, because at this point it doesn't even matter. But what I do know is that it went the grand jury, they assigned me a victim advocate, and I dealt with them for several months afterwards. And the story gets to the point where the grand jury, and I don't know if you know much about grand juries, but that's where they say there's evidence for an indictment. So it goes to a grand jury before it even gets to an indictment. So he was arrested for murder. He said, yes, I killed Justin. I felt fear of my life, and that's why I took those measures. And so when it went to the grand jury, it kept getting delayed and delayed and delayed. And then finally, and I don't know if it was March or April of that year. So it had been November was when he passed. March or April, it finally went to grand jury.
And this was
And
just
when
to get an official indictment.
in official indictment, yes, where they felt like there was enough evidence to indict him for murder, which was what he was arrested for. And when it went to grand jury, they allowed him to plead self-defense and no indictment went. So he was free. So imagine, as a mother, you just lost your son and he was taken by another person, but now that person is no longer going to face the consequences of his actions in my eyes. So when I left that prosecuting attorney's office, I was mad as hell. I was like, I don't know. I've let my son down. I wasn't there to protect him. I wasn't there to, it was my fault that I moved to Columbus and there was always this. And if I wouldn't have done this, if I wouldn't have done that, and that's where the free will kinds of come in that I had to finally absorb. But it was, I've let him down now, where this person that took his life is allowed to go free after he made the decision of taking my son's life. So now, on top of that, I'm not getting justice for Justin either. So he's taken from me, and now I can't even get justice for him. I'm failing as a parent. And that's when I had to make a choice. I could sit and be angry and mad as hell and resentful and hateful towards everyone and everything and lay in my bed and just give up. And no one would talk me out of it, right? No, everybody would be like, she lost her son. Let, you know, it's understandably. Or it's un, you know, I completely get it. I don't think I could survive, right? That's what people would think in their mind. They would allow me to do that. And the other choice that I had was, all right, you can get up, you can close this part of everything, close this hatred, this anger, this revenge, because I guarantee you he's not thinking about Hope today. He's not even thinking about Justin today. He's living his life the way that he would like to live it. And maybe he thinks about it. Maybe it warps him in his dreams. I don't know. But as far as I'm concerned, he doesn't have any care in the world about what Hope's doing, what Hope's thinking. And so what I had to do was I had to take all of that negative, hateful revenge, anger towards everyone, God included. I was pissed off at God. And put it into something that honored my son and honored him in a way of his life versus the way that he died. And so that turning point for me was when I walked out of that prosecuting attorney's office and I thought, okay, I could fight, I could do a civil suit, I could do this, I could do that. And it was like, what is that going to do for Justin? What is that? That's just going to prolong your grieving process as far as acceptance, and anger and resentment, when you can go and do something amazing and honor him. And so I didn't know what that was. Trust me. And I, you know, was gracious. I mean, I was grateful. My work had employee assistance programs, so they allowed me to go to counseling, and I went through a lot of grief share group, which is like a Christian-based grief group. And that sort of started me on my journey of what can I do to honor my son instead of dwelling in that hatred and anger.
Can we keep the, I'd like to keep that chapter open for a minute if we can.
Absolutely.
You said you were in denial at the beginning of it. When did it become real?
I think in a visual perspective, when it became real was when I walked into the funeral home and I made all these arrangements, and she turned to me and asked me if I was ready to see Justin. And it had been quite some time since I saw my son, September, and this was November.
Okay,
I
wow.
talked to him on the phone, but physically not seeing him. And I said I was ready, and she walked me down this long hall. And she said, "Do you want to go in by yourself?" Because I had a slew of people with me when I was planning it. So we were in this big, huge conference room, and I said I wanted to go in by myself first. And because I don't think I was prepared, but I knew for sure nobody else in that room with me was going to be prepared. And as a mother hen, you know, you want to take care of everybody. So I remember visually, this was the first time that I had it, like I could visually see. I walked into the room and I looked down, and it's a very long room. And in my head, it probably wasn't that big of a room, but it felt like the longest walk of my life. Like it was never ending. And it was a large room, and I seen my son at the very end of this room on a white hospital bed. He w had no clothes on but a sheet. And I remember his beautiful brown hair, like you have beautiful brown hair. His beautiful brown hair. And I just remember walking up to him, and it makes me emotional right now, but just touching him, and he was so cold. And I remember thinking, this is not my son. This isn't, you know. And I remember looking at him and staring at him and touching every part of his face, right? And I remember touching his head and his cheeks, and he was so cold. And I remember rubbing his, you know, his face and his long hair, and I couldn't pull the sheet down to see where he was shot. And I never did. I never ever did, because I didn't want that visual. And people do ask me, you know, did you look? No, I didn't look. I didn't look any further than his beautiful face. And I remember saying, "I'm so sorry." And I felt like that was the first time the reality of everything hit, and that I couldn't fix this, right? As a mom, I couldn't fix this. Here's my child, just. And so I remember just staring and thinking, this is not happening, right? This isn't what's going on. It's like, but that visually is when I first started to accept it. And it was probably that moment was probably that exact moment was probably the worst moment of my life, even the phone call, because the phone call wasn't real, right? The phone call wasn't in my face, I could see it, But this was the first time visually I could understand what was going on. And nothing, you know, you sort of like, I'll wake up from this kind of feeling.
Yeah.
And this was, it was here in this moment. And so as, you know, I took a couple moments with him and I talked to him, and I was, you know, begging for his forgiveness, that I couldn't protect him, that I was sorry. You know, all those things that you would say as a mother. And then I decided it was time to allow everyone else to come in. And I don't think anybody was any more prepared as I was. But I just remember in that moment, his grandmother walking in and screaming at the top of her lungs. And I remember just thinking, just stop screaming. I mean, it was like echoing in my head. And I know that was the way of her reacting to, you know, her grandson. And it was horrific. But it's this day, that was probably the worst sounds I've ever heard in my life. Was just, it was a, because I don't remember screaming or just, it was amazingly loud and painful to hear. And I just remember just trying to just focus like on my son, and as people were coming up and they were, you know, touching Justin, and this happened throughout the funeral too. It was really hard for me to watch people touch him. And I don't know why. I think it was sort of like, it was like, that wasn't Justin, right? Like, he wasn't touchy-feely. He was like, to me, he was. But that echoing of that screaming and that crying, I finally said, we got to go. I couldn't do it anymore. I couldn't do it anymore. And I walked out of there, and that was probably that moment. Those moments together were probably the hardest thing I've ever went through in my entire life.
And so then it was, you know, kind of back into business mode, talking with organ donor people, talking with the funeral home people, arranging a cemetery lot, all of those things that have to be done over the next couple of days. Did you feel, what was the funeral? I mean, I imagine it seems like funeral homes would want to provide the service of helping people go through all those calls and steps. Do you feel like they were supporting you in that, or just kind of giving you marching orders?
They were awesome. You know, from the get-go, they were great. They took steps. They were very helpful in, you know, if you need help with this or if you need help with that. One of the things was, Justin had passed in November, so Christmas was coming, and I said, I don't want flowers. I want people to bring toys. And because Justin was big about Christmas. Oh, was he big about Christmas? And so from the day he was born, he was big about Christmas. And so I was like, I want people to bring toys, and we'll donate these toys, you know, to charity. And so they helped with all of the, I think we got over 75 toys. They arranged it all. They picked them up from the funeral. Or it actually, we ended up having to have it at a church. Because the funeral home was booked, and they said they could do it like a week after. And I'm like, I can't do a week after. And so a church in our hometown actually held the service. And they were amazing too. And, so they handled picking up the toys from the church and delivering it to an orphanage, which was awesome. So the funeral home just were incredible. They were simply incredible. They walked me through a lot of things. But you know, as a mom, this is sort of like your last gift to your son. And so I'm like, all expenses, you know, he wants the best. And he probably was thinking, are you serious, mom? Do I really need this silver lined casket? Right. You know what I mean? Because that was Justin. Justin was very practical. And unless it was my money, then it was a different story. But you know what I mean? Like when it's totally mom's money, it's like, you know, there's limitless. But so I, you know, of course had to have things on the casket and I had to have this big mural put on. And it got to the point where I was like, wow, you know, this was my final gift to my son. And then at the end of the day, I thought, oh, none of that mattered. None of that mattered. And, but when you're not thinking, you're not thinking in the midst of everything. And like, I don't know. And I've heard since then that there's funeral advocates and there's grief advocates and there's funeral officiants that can help you know, make these financial decisions better. But when you're in the midst of it, I was like, he's gonna have the best. He's gonna have the best casket. He's gonna have the best, you know, service. He's gonna have the best songs. He's gonna have the best, you know. And in hindsight, it's like none of that mattered. But at the time, you really aren't thinking.
And did you end up donating any of his organs to that?
So that was another failure I felt of mine. And I'm glad that you bring that up because I don't think people prepare themselves. But Justin was very much wanted to be an organ donor. And I
He did.
remember on his, he was very much an organ. He's like, mom, you know, and I would ask him, I'm like, are you sure? Because when you die, they, you know. And of course, that didn't dawn on me that I would need to talk to them. But they ask you a ton of questions. First of all, what a horrific job that is.
And they have to do it pretty fast, right? Like you're talking
Right.
to them like right away.
Right. It's like immediate, like that night that I arrived in town, like I got this call and I was not prepared for it whatsoever. And they ask a gazillion questions and I could not answer some of the questions, like, you know, did Justin ever do any kind of alcohol, drugs? There, I, you know, he lived on his own. I don't know. And you know, I would hope not, but I couldn't tell you that for certain. Did he have any disease? Was he sexually active? I'm like, I hope not, but that's a parent's worst nightmare to talk about. And you know, different things that I could not answer. They finally came to the conclusion because of the immediate, the urgency of his organs that he could not be a donor. And so I felt as a parent, I failed him because that was what he wanted. And so I think if people know, that's one of the things, if like you know that you want to be an organ donor, or if you know, you need to like find out what's the rules, what's the regulations, and make sure that that could happen because like, you know, his eyes, his, you know, his heart, his, all of that could have went to some kind of beautiful use. But because I didn't know the answers to certain questions, it was just not possible because of the urgency. Like, I don't know if they could have ran to, I don't know. But I felt like I failed as a mother in that as well, because I couldn't even, you know, fulfill that wish of Justin's or, you know, help save someone else's life. And so that was probably one of the crushing things that with the organ donors. So I encourage if anybody is an organ donor to find out exactly what they need and let your family know.
When did you see the man who killed your son?
Never seen him.
So
Not once.
he wasn't there at grand jury or anything like that?
I
Or
was not
you're
at
not
the
at
grand
that?
jury.
You
No,
did not attend.
no. Yeah, you can't attend the grand jury. The grand jury is basically, from what I understand, it's sort of a jury, but it's before the indictment. It's not a trial jury. It's a grand jury where the prosecuting attorney goes in and the defense attorney go in and they tell their sides, and then that group of people those people decide if there's an indictment or not. And 99% of the time, I shouldn't say no, I don't know. But most of the time, they agree that there's enough, you know, evidence to at least indict them, right?
And have a trial.
And have a trial. But I'll be honest with you. I think God was watching. And at the time, I've never been religious. Like, I'm very uneducated when it comes to God. But I think that I think he knew that I couldn't handle 2 or 3 years of trial. And so I almost look at it as I had better plans, and that plan was that's closed. That there's nothing you can do, Hope. There's nothing you can do.
Other people made that decision for you, and there's nothing right. You can do.
Yeah. And I could dwell on it, and I could let it eat me alive, or I can make the decision to move on from that and make changes in what I feel is honoring my son.
When in this process did you go to get his stuff from his house and, you know, kind of close down his life?
So he had quite a bit of stuff at my home. Okay. And so he really only had clothes.
Okay.
He had a duffel bag. He had a duffel bag, right? And he lived large, let's just say.
Right.
A friend somehow went to, because also you have to figure that the police had his cell phone. They had all of his personal belongings that were in, you know, under the investigation. So anything personal was with the police. So really he had a duffel bag full of stuff, and a friend had went there, gathered it. I didn't even know. And to be honest with you, I was like, I don't even want to look at that house. I don't want to see that house. I don't want to go near that house. And anything there of Justin's, I felt like it wasn't worth it for me to go through that, go to get it. And so a friend had brought this duffel bag over and had a pair of shoes and his clothes. And that was it. That was all that I got from that house. And it literally, like, of course I have all of his stuff here. And on this side of the wall, you can see I had his t-shirts made into a quilt. So that's really all I have. And I've never besides, I did see his mugshot. I did see that. So
part of the grieving process for you was distance from that whole night, it sounds like.
You know, I've never heard it say that way, but you're exactly right. I didn't want no part of that night. It wasn't going to help me. And like exactly what you mentioned, years later when I started writing and doing my podcast, or not appearing on podcasts, somebody asked me if I had news articles. And I was like, I don't have anything. And so I researched it. And that's when I found out that somebody had mentioned in the news article that there was a struggle with the gun. And I never knew that for years. There was all kinds of stories, you know, this happened and this happened and this happened. And nobody knows besides those three people in that house.
Yeah.
And I think I really did distant myself from that night, from that scene, from that environment. And I'll be honest with you, I don't think I ever want to know what truly happened, because I don't know if I'd ever believe it.
Right.
I don't know who would tell me the truth.
Right. So grand jury chooses not to indict. It's the springtime now.
Mm-hmm.
You've gone through your first Thanksgiving and Christmas without Justin.
Mm-hmm.
And you had this moment of, I can either stop living
mm-hmm.
and live in
mm-hmm.
grief, Or I can continue my grieving process and figure out what I'm going to do with that, this experience. Do I have that right?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, Thanksgiving, I didn't get out of bed. And Christmas, no decorations. I remember shopping, literally because my grandkids, they expected Christmas from their Nana. They didn't understand that Nana was going through some really tough stuff. So I remember I went shopping, like in December, and I remember it felt like I was holding my breath when I pulled out of the driveway, and then I exhaled when I pulled back in from shopping from the driveway. Like, that experience in itself was overwhelming. And it was just like, get in, get out kind of thing. And that's how that 3 months, and Justin's birthday is February 5th. So I had Justin's birthday come up, right after like the holidays, and then Justin's birthday. And then I remember being, again, the mother hen, like, trying to take care of everybody. It's like, oh, we're going to have a birthday party for him, a celebration. And it was me trying to comfort everybody around me and not being the day that, you know what I mean? Like, it literally was like, this is not what I should have been doing today. But I was like, you know, let's sing happy birthday. And we had a cake and we did all this. And I was always trying to protect everybody else and sort of make it better for everybody else. But at the end of the day, I'm like, that was not a great idea, Hope. And so learning from those experiences has taught me so much, like with my program and my book, that, you know, expectations of what people expect from you and what you expect from other people when you're grieving is completely different than what you think it would be, in a way that I felt like everybody was looking at me going, you got to be strong, Hope, you got to be strong, you got, you know, and, you know, make it all about everybody else. And at the end of the day, I'm left empty, right? Because it ended up being about everybody else and not about Justin. And so in the springtime, as I went through counseling, I learned a great number of things. I went through a grief share group, which is a religious-based group, Christian-based, where at the time I was, you know, like I said, I was mad at hell, God. And I remember my counselor saying, just give it a try. It's a group. It's, you know, and I'm like, you want me to go into a church where I'm already mad as hell at God and like talk to people like, and you know,
who are on speaking terms with God, like,
right,
get me away from this.
Right. Like, I was walking in there going, God's going to, you know, hit me, or, you know, and I went in literally like this, my hands folded. I had a chip on my shoulder and I was like, I don't know what you're going to tell me, but I'm pissed and I don't even want to be here kind of thing. And I remember going in there for the first time, this sweet lady, Emily, comes out and she greets me and she's like, welcome to Grief Share. I'm like, yeah, whatever. And so she takes me back this hallway and it's in a church and there's all these children's drawings on the walls. And I'm thinking, oh, great. How can I be pissed off when there's kids' drawings everywhere, you know, and all this happiness and God stuff going on? And I remember sitting there and having my arms crossed and she told me, she was like, I'll be right back. I'm going to see if there's other people coming. And I'm like, if I walk out, if I go to the exit, which I saw the exit on my way, she wouldn't know the difference. I could just leave and she would not be able to catch me. Right. And she, and I sat there in these tiny, tiny little chairs around me. And it reminded me of kindergarten, you know, and then I felt like I was in school again. And she comes back and she said, Hope, you're it. Nobody else is coming. I'm like, oh, great. So I'm going to have to be mad as hell with you, this nice, lovely lady, and not be able to express myself and say how angry I am. and we're going to have a one-on-one session. That's what we're getting right now. And I'm like, you're going to preach all to me and tell me how, you know, great God is, and, you know. And I remember her saying to me, so tell me your story. And I just start sobbing. And I'm like, I'm mad as hell. And I'm mad at God. And I want to know why he picked Justin. And I want to know why he couldn't take me instead of him. And I'm like, and I'm just going on and on and on and on. I'm unloading, right? And she looked at me and she said, God would understand that you're mad. He gets it. And then I was like, what? That's not the answer I was looking for, right? I was like, oh, you know, you need to forgive and blah, blah, blah. It was, she got it. She understood and she helped me understand that you know, perfection isn't what it's about. And so I learned a lot from that group, and eventually people started coming in, thank goodness. And that's when I realized that group situation was more, it wasn't the, because I talk about grief share, it's like a Zig Ziglar kind of workbook. It's like the 70s speaker kind of vibe. It was being around others who understood what I was going through, because we had people that had lost their mother, had lost their spouse, had lost their sister. And it was being around in that group that made me feel I wasn't alone. And that when people say, you know, I understand what you're going through. No, I don't think you understand what I'm going through. But these people got it. Yeah. They, and it was mostly, you know, being around people that totally understood the pain and the all that uniqueness that grief causes. Like, you know, nobody talks about brain fog. Like, I dealt with brain fog a lot. And like, I thought I was going crazy because I couldn't concentrate. And so going back to work was very difficult for me because I had that brain fog, and I was in a role where it was like, you know, stress and answer questions, and you got to keep, you know, moving on. And, you know, and I would be sitting there like frozen, like I couldn't think, and those kind of things nobody talks about. So it was very eye opening to be in that, that space. And those groups. So they helped them. And it was a 13-week program I went through twice. And I'm still friends with many of those people, actually all those people today.
Wow. So that those 26 weeks were something that started in that springtime?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
So it was ending right about the time that you were coming up on the 1 year anniversary of Justin's death.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so you go through all those first, and you have the first Easter, the first, you know, July 4th, first Halloween. Justin was into trick or treat, even though that kid probably would have went trick or treating until he was 30 or whatever. He loved candy. And so when it came up on the year anniversary, I remember, well, during all this, I knew that I wanted to do something. And I didn't know what that was. I knew I was like, should I write a book? Should I blog? Should I speak? Should I, you know, all those kind of things, and nothing like clicked, right? And so I ended up volunteering a lot, and that helped. Like, I would volunteer at homeless shelters. I would do a lot of sort of like volunteer in the community, trying to help others in that kind of way. And so when Justin's first year anniversary came up, apparently I didn't learn from day one with the birthday party. So I was like, hey, we'll all get together and have dinner. I'll pay for it. We'll have, so we ended up going to a restaurant again. It was all about everybody else, me trying to make everybody else feel good. And at the end of the night, I left going, that's not what I wanted to do today. Like, this wasn't, you know, the best way to spend my time. And so doing all those first year, you sort of have to go through the emotions, the pain, the anguish. But I'll tell you that it gets, a lot of times it gets more painful the second year, because you're going through all the first of everything. And right. Then the second year, it's even harder. Again. Yeah. It's almost like the first, it's not, it's almost like you're in that deep stage of, you know, grief. And then the second year you're in like, okay, it's in your face. Here it is again.
Right.
So.
And less and less people are.
Oh yeah.
Are part of the whole, like, we want to be there for you. Like, everybody else has gotten back to their lives.
That usually happens. Like, I was not aware of this. Like, I didn't realize that normal life began like 2 weeks after the funeral. Like, everybody goes back to their normal life, and you're still in that stage of like, what the hell just happened? I'm still here. Hello. And I think that's probably the hardest part with, people start to, the calls stop, the nobody wants to talk about it. And that's another thing. When you deal with the holidays, nobody wants to talk about it. Nobody wants to mention it, because one, they think it's going to, you know, hurt me, or two, it's too traumatic.
Right.
And so I'm like, let's talk about Justin. Let's share stories. And they're like, oh, that's heavy. You know? And then when you run into people and they're like, oh, I've been meaning to call you, that kind of thing. And I tell people, like we talk about in expectations, you got to be forgiving. That's the one thing you have to, and it's ironic that when you're grieving, you have to forgive other people, because one, nobody likes to be around people that are grieving. Let's just be honest. It's not a fun thing. And two, they're 100% glad it's you and not them. I mean, let's be honest. Most people are like, they are very apologetic, but is it more because they're sad for you, or is it like, thank God that didn't happen to me? And that's just honesty kind of talking, where, you know, I feel like people, there's some sincere people in the world that really do care. And then there's, and even your family can start to stay away, because it's too hard for them to see you in pain. And so a lot of times, and I'm learning this, family breaks apart because they can't stand to see the other person in pain and they can't fix it. So instead of supporting each other and joining together, it almost breaks families apart. And I've seen it happen over and over again. And it's sad. And I never had a very tight-knit family. And that's why with my kids, I was like, we are going to be tight. We are going to talk every day. And my oldest son to this day, I just talked to him right before this podcast. And I talk to him every single day. And if I don't, I'm like, what's going on? Where you been? What's up? And I eventually moved back to my hometown last year. I was lucky enough to do that. So now he sees me all the time, which he's like, great. But he definitely loves it when it's babysitting time for the grandkids. But, you know, family, I never really had a tight-knit, close-knit relationship with my parents. And so those calls lasted a couple months. And then I think they did the parenting thing. They came to the events, you know, but to this day, they still don't talk about it. They don't want to talk about it.
Yeah. So second year is really hard. When does grief to hope become a thing?
Yeah. So after, like, I kept thinking, you know, volunteering, helping, what can I do? I started writing a book.
Did someone inspire you to write a book, or you were just like, one day you were like, you know what, I'm going to write a book?
I think what started it was one of the things my counselor said was write a letter to Justin. And so every day I wrote a letter to Justin, and you can tell my emotions changing throughout, like I think it was 4 or 5 months after Justin passed. I was writing him every day. And then I remember going to her and saying, I feel so guilty. I didn't write him the other day. I just forgot. And she said, this isn't for Justin. You know that, right? This is for you. And I was like, the guilt that I was feeling was like, I didn't write to him. It's almost like I didn't call him. And she said, Hope, this isn't about Justin. This is about Hope. And then I was like, okay. She's like, You don't have to keep doing it if it's not helping. Mm-hmm. And so eventually that journaling came into almost therapeutic for me. Like I would write out and write that story and, you know, talk. And so I wrote a ton of stuff and nothing ever seemed to like fit. Like I would start and stop, start and stop. And then what happened was COVID hit in 2020. And so literally 4 years later, COVID hit. And I remember thinking to myself, the hell that I went through with Justin, imagine going through it in that time where people are counting deaths on TV, deaths in our face, illness is in our face. We are like, you have to be okay with you right now. Like literally you're with yourself. That's it. 24/7. You know, you have so much time to think because you can't go to the grocery, you can't do. And so I remember going, what can I do to help others? Because this put that level on COVID or level on grief with COVID. Like people were dying, couldn't have funerals. I couldn't imagine not having a funeral for Justin. That, you know, they're dropping their husbands off at the hospital and they're never seeing them again. You know, I just couldn't imagine all these things. And like, if you're having COVID and your father dies and they're like, yeah, we're at 55,763 deaths today. What if grandpa was that number? What if he was that 55,700? And I was like, this is such in your face. What can I do? And so as we transferred from office work to working from home, as we are right now on Zoom or virtually, I was like, that's it. I can try to bring people together online and sort of give them a place to go, a safe space to go to talk about their grief and not feel so isolated and alone. And so in June of 2020, I sat down and I asked God to give me all these words. He had been a friend of mine for a while now. Okay. And so I asked him, I was like, help me. If this is what you want me to do, help me, right? And I created this program like within days. No kidding. Grief to Hope is a 7-week virtual program that I created, and it's for 7 weeks. It's completely free. And we start the first week is, and we meet virtually. And you can meet in your pajamas, drinking wine, having a cup of coffee, a beer, whatever, in your living room. Because I know when grief, it's very hard to leave your home. And especially leave your home to go talk about grief. That's even harder. But then also with COVID, you couldn't, right? You couldn't go anywhere. And so I got Zoom. I got a personal, you know, line for Zoom. I was all big. I got copyrighted. I was like, woohoo. And so it was a 7-week program. It still is 7-week program. The first week we meet, it's my introduction, my why, my story, my everything. I have people introduce themselves if they want. Nobody's expected to talk or even be on camera. And then weeks 2 through the 6th week, I spell out the word grief. So our main topic for the second week is G for grief is gift of time. We talk about how time helps, how time harms, how time changes things. And then we have that main discussion and then we open it up for any other discussions that they want to talk about, anything that's been going on. And then I end with a quote. And then the next week is R for receive help. We talk about how do you ask for help? How do you receive help? Was there something that helped you? And then I is inspiration. And this is where my focus has stayed is inspiration is needed in grief. And it doesn't sound like you need, like that doesn't go together. But when you're grieving, you have to have something that inspires you to get out of bed every day. Whether that's your family, your job, you're writing a book, you're doing a podcast, whatever that inspiration, big or small, tiny, huge, that gets you out of bed is what you need to find. So we talk about that. And then E is expectations, which we talked about. What do people expect from you? What do you expect from them? How has it changed? And then F is feel everything, which sort of morphed into this almost show and tell, but it's my favorite part of the session where we bring pictures, we share stories, we say their name, we tell what's their favorite pizza topping, what was their favorite TV show. You know, it's sort of like an open conversation of, I want to know about your loved one. And then the final session is to hope, which is basically, what's your next step? What do you want to do going forward? Whether that be, I hope I just want to go through his things, or I want to clean out his room, or I want to write a book, or I want to go to the grave and actually go up to the stone versus just sitting in my car, you know, those kind of things. So we talk about just moving forward and what does that mean? And so we've had 7 sessions since 2020. And it's absolutely free. It's a program I offer. And we start a new session in January. So I usually go 7 weeks, take a little break, and then we pick back up. And you can go. I have people that have been going since 2020. I have people that go for a session. I have people that come and go because life comes and goes and they change. And we've sort of built this community that just keeps growing. And it's been amazing. And that program is just something I'm so extremely grateful for. And then the book, Grief to Hope, is exactly it. It's exactly that 7-week program in book form, but I really talk about in detail the story from start, like I did here, and how the program works. And that book was just released in July, and that took me a couple years to write. But that's for people that just aren't comfortable coming online, but they want to know about it. They want to know the program. And so I wrote the book to sort of like for those people that just aren't comfortable coming online and talking to people, at least it'll be something there for them to have. So that's where Grief to Hope, and man, it's been a ride. And I get pumped up every time I go onto a session, and I feel like it's providing hope and positivity. And the whole point of Grief to Hope is like, you're not alone. You can come to this and be your authentic self. No mask. No, how are you? I'm good. And we go on with our day. It's real, raw, grit, honest grief in a place where you can be comfortable knowing you're not by yourself, you're not going crazy, and you're not doing grief wrong. So it's awesome. I love it.
And that is... more information on that is at your website, which is grief2hopesupport.com. grief2hopesupport.com. You can get a link to your book there. You can see, you said there's the next session's coming up in January.
Yep. And you can absolutely, you can email me straight from that website if you have any questions about anything.
Okay. And just a quick question for anybody who's curious. I'd imagine these sessions are closed to people who are grieving only, right? It's not for people that just want to come and see what it's about.
You know, I would love for anybody to come and see what it's about. Okay. It's not closed. So if you feel like it's something that you're interested in, absolutely. The greatest thing that I'd love to expand to is men. Like we've had a sprinkle of men throughout the group, and we have found out the expectations of men are different than the expectations of women. So I'd love to hear a man's perspective on different varieties of things that we talk about. So yeah, it's open to anyone.
Okay.
If you're supporting somebody grieving, if you're going through grief, if you just want to know about it, absolutely. It is not closed to anyone. And I want to make sure that people understand that just because, you know, I experienced a tragic death, that doesn't mean that my grief is any more severe than someone who lost their mother or, you know, grandma, lived a long life and I'm grieving her. Every grief is important, and we do not put levels or severity. It's all respected in my group. And any religion, thoughts, opinions, all of that, we are open and very respectful of anyone's beliefs. And I encourage that as well throughout the program.
So that kind of brings up the last two questions I wanted to ask. One was, you know, you said you didn't really grow up in a religious way or were a religious person, and then you got really, you know, angry at God, and then you said God's become a friend of yours. That's how you described it. Do you feel like you're a religious person now, or how would you describe your relationship with God?
So I have faith in my life, in a way that is comfortable for me. And for others that believe in God and believe in faith and that go to church and that is comfortable for them, my faith is believing that I have someone that I can count on and that I believe and have faith in. Am I educated about the Bible? Nope. Do I understand the Bible? Nope. But I tell it in a way of this, like I'm really learning. I'm trying to learn. And I'm comfortable with where I'm at in my faith. Could I quote the Bible? Nope. But like I have several pieces of the Bible that I read and I try to listen and try to educate myself when it comes to faith. But I believe and I'm comfortable with that in my faith. And I believe that God has a purpose for me. And I have to believe that that purpose is because of what I went through and what I need to share with others just to help. And that's how I believe in the faith in what's comfortable in me and my faith.
And the last question I wanted to ask you is kind of a selfish question. You know, going through all of this, what are your feelings towards guns?
I love that question because I've only been asked it once before. And I was sort of blindsided when they asked me that because I was like, wow, I'll be honest with you. If you have a gun, great. If you don't, great. I have no thoughts on it whatsoever. Only because I grew up in a house of hunters and my ex-husband was a hunter. My current husband, he doesn't hunt. He claims he hit a deer once, but that's about as good as it gets. anyways, so as far as gun control goes, I feel like I don't want you telling me what I can have, and I'm not going to tell you what you can have. And I believe in free will. So that's exactly what I feel like. Would it have happened if he didn't have a gun? Of course not. But what else could have happened? I don't know.
Yeah.
So, I have to believe that it's everybody's right to choose.
Well, I'm really grateful for your willingness to answer that question because I'm not a hunter. I have very limited experience with guns, but I'm on Facebook just like a lot of people. And there are so many people talking about that stuff. Who, you know, in my experience, a lot of them have no experience with guns either.
Right,
I'd much prefer to hear opinions from you know, folks like yourself who have real world experiences and can offer some degree of personal opinion.
Yeah, I think that you're not in my house, I'm not in your house. Like, literally, you know, you can do whatever means necessary and whatever you're comfortable with. I don't judge. And I hope that more people would learn.
Wouldn't that be nice if we could all be
friends? Wouldn't that be nice? Yes, that would be so nice. So nice. Peace on earth.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Hope. I really appreciate it. For listeners, I'll link Hope's website in my show notes, but it's grief2hopesupport.com. Hope, do you have any other closing thoughts?
No, I appreciate it. And definitely reach out to me via my website if you have any questions whatsoever. Or I'm on Facebook. Hope Rieger and Grief to Hope is on Facebook, as well as Instagram, LinkedIn. But if you have any questions or concerns, please reach out. I'm more than willing to answer them. Happy to help.
Awesome. Thank you. So housekeeping items, Hope. I normally do interviews in batches, and then it normally takes me forever to actually edit them and post them. As you probably figured that out when you listened to that last episode,
I'm like, June.
Yeah, so and I do the podcast not to keep a timeline or anything, but as a creative outlet for myself. So I kind of give myself some leniency.
Good for you.
So, what I do promise though, is that I'll let you know when the episode goes up. And I really, really can't thank you enough. You have an amazing story and you're a beautiful person. And I'm really glad I got chat with you for the last, you know, hour and a half.
Yeah, it went by quick. It did. Thank you so much for having me. It was my pleasure. And if you need anything in the future, just reach out.
Thank you, Hope. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Yeah. Well, enjoy your evening and I'll be in touch.
That's perfect. All right. Take care. Peace. Bye.
I had to take all of that negative, hateful, revenge, anger towards everyone, God included, I was pissed off at God, and put it into something that honored my son, and honored him in a way of his life versus the way that he died. When you are grieving, you have to have something that inspires you to get out of bed every day. This interview has brought so much goodness to me. I'll always be grateful to Hope for sharing her story, not only with me, but by creating her program and book. A new session of Hope's course starts January 5th, 2023. Everyone is welcome, whether or not you are experiencing grief, or you can read Hope's book, as she mentioned in the episode. Learn more at grief2hopesupport.com. That's grief2hopesupport.com. If you are interested in being a guest on the podcast, visit anchor.fm/asimplelife and leave me an audio message with your contact information. To support A Simple Life with Michael Jeffries, subscribe to the podcast, give us a rating on iTunes or Spotify, or best yet, share the podcast with a friend. Thanks for listening. We'll see you down the road.